Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. Here's a Thursday. Let's go at it. Gary, how are you?
Well, not, observing.
Yeah, all right.
Like normal, just spent the day observing, for example, some of the panel discussions at the World More Poverty Forum going on across the big pond.
Mm.
You ready?
All right.
Here's Al.
Yeah.
And the accumulated amount is now trapping as much extra heat as would be released by 600,000 Hiroshima-class atomic bombs exploding every single day on the Earth. That's what's boiling the oceans, creating these atmospheric rivers and the rain bombs and sucking the moisture out of the land and creating the droughts and melting the ice and raising the sea level. And
well, then, wait a minute. Then why did you lie about ethanol? Why did you make climate change worse by admitting you lied for over a decade?
Yep.
About ethanol.
It wasn't until that was during the 2000 election cycle, and it was it wasn't until 2010.
Yep.
That he admitted to lying about that.
Why did he lie about that?
Right.
Why was there not a peep from Al Gore when you had environmentalists come out against what Joe Biden did? His own cabinet, his own climate czar came out and said the worst thing that you can do for climate change of the options that you have is close down the Keystone Pipeline. He did it anyway, killing thousands of union jobs. I did see a story. I got to find that story. I think it was when I was on vacation that union leaders have not said a word about all the thousands of jobs that were cut.
Yeah.
By Joe Biden. I'm like, because they don't care. They don't care. Union members, they view you as suckers.
Yep.
You're a union member. Your leadership thinks you're the biggest suckers out there. They pay us their dues and we work against their best interests.
Yep.
That's what the union leadership has become today. I mean, liberalism across the board is the most destructive to the people that invest in them the most.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yep. No, it is.
You know, we talk about whether it was Obama. When Obama lied about Obamacare, who was he lying to? He was lying to the people that voted for him, because the people that didn't vote for him did not want Obamacare. So he lied to the people about keeping their doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. He didn't care. Mm-hmm. He'll lie to the people that he votes for. Everything that Biden lies about. Everything.
Yeah, right.
Yep. Everything that Biden lies about hurts the people that are the most vulnerable. We've talked about this so much.
Yeah, it's and over again, they still get the votes and nothing has changed with unions. They have not elected new union leadership to change that. I mean, we've been talking about it for years.
Yeah, this is decades we've been talking about this. Yeah. Yeah. So but I had to play the Al Gore thing because it's just like, wow. Did anybody ask that question? If you're so passionate and the world is going to end. And by the way, it was noted where he said currently the oceans are boiling. Then let's look at the latest weather forecast. The high today, 213 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Because the world would have to be 212 degrees.
Yeah.
And so I just added one more for the heck of it.
Right, yeah. Right,
you would have to be 212 degrees Fahrenheit for the oceans to be boiling. You know, I guess accuracy, at least for us, is important since he is saying the oceans are currently boiling.
Yeah, right.
We didn't know that.
Bomb cyclones. You know, that's one of those good words you can take to their political rallies, like the one they're having right now. It's a political rally. It's nothing more, nothing less. It's a political rally. Let's scare people. Let's get a bunch of fear-mongering going, which they've been doing for years.
Yeah.
In 1989, they were saying, if you work in Washington, D.C., by the year 2000, you'll be taking a gondola to work.
Are you taking a gondola to work if you live in Washington, D.C.?
If you're taking a gondola to work, please take pictures and send them to us. I'd love to see that.
Or,
but you're not doing it as a result of the streets flooding over permanently.
Or if anyone out there can find, as Al Gore has said, said it yesterday, that the oceans are boiling.
Yeah, right.
If you can find the boiling going on, please send us the pictures now. If you have, for example, oxygen bubbles coming up, that would not be. You'd have to. We need the bubbles and we need the accurate temperature.
Yeah.
You need to put a thermometer into the part of the ocean that's actually boiling.
And with this whole bomb cyclone thing, and certainly we feel for our friends out west who are having to deal with the horrific stories and the conditions of massive flooding. The other part of that, and we go through this cycle every time this happens, because when it comes to rain in parts of California, it's feast or famine. The editorial board the other day at the Wall Street Journal, water is a terrible thing for California to waste.
Oh, yeah.
The Golden State hasn't built the storage to make use of winter rains. We've been talking about this for a long, long time. This is fixable to a certain extent. You're in drought territory. That part is not fixable. What you can do to mitigate the effects of drought is build as much water storage as humanly possible. And it is feasible, but they refuse to do it.
Well, we've often talked about in the state of Texas, if you ever land at DFW Airport, when you come in, the one thing I always get, people tell me when they come in, you know, they'll visit me and they'll say, my gosh, I didn't know it. You know, you guys got lakes all over the place. I can't believe the number of lakes. They're all man-made.
Yeah, right.
And they're for, number one, flood control.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, water.
Right.
Number three, recreation.
Mm-hmm.
And the plans are still continuing as Texas expands to build more lakes.
Right. Yeah.
It's what you have. If you have people living in an area, people need water and they need help from flood control.
They're building one northeast of here right now. And, you know, these are massive lakes. Yeah, they are. And that's what you have to do. These are the things it's not that you can fix the drought situation completely.
No.
What you're looking to do is mitigate it to the greatest extent possible.
Well, there are certain drought areas.
Right.
We live in one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We're feast or famine here.
Yep. Exactly. And a lot of California is the same way. And, you know, they were talking about diverting some of the water from rivers and everything else. And, of course, that was never going to happen. And they say, well, no, we're not going to do that. And then, you know, and of course, rivers go to the ocean. And then they tell you, well, we're in trouble because the oceans are rising. We're not going to use river water. The river water goes to the ocean. Yeah, but you're screaming that the oceans are rising. what are we doing? And these are the things that, and again, look, that clearly is a oversimplification of that part of it, but I'm not wrong. And the thing is that, you know, again, I don't expect California to be able to solve their drought crisis, but they can do a hell of a lot better job. And we talked about and have talked about deforestation first and foremost to make sure that, again, you're not going to stop these massive forest fires, but you can stop them from being so severe. There is a way to do that.
Mm-hmm. And they refuse.
And they refuse.
In many cases, they refuse to do it.
And, you know, it's the thing is that, and then over the years, what we have learned and a lot of people know that when a lot of that forestation burns off, that there aren't the pine needles on the bed, on the floor of the forest. So when you get heavy rain, what do you get? Mudslides.
Yep.
And these are things, and again, that's an oversimplification, because it's as if they want it to be severe because they need a crisis.
Yeah. But that's the one question that I'm sure didn't come up.
Hmm.
I will tell you that if it was a conservative forum and somebody had lied for as long as Al Gore did,
yep,
someone would call him out on it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where you say, where you look at it and you see the anger that he has and the fury that he has. Mm-hmm. It's all fake. It's all fake from Al Gore. How do we know? Because if you truly believe with the passion that he's talking about that the world is going to boil, then you don't lie for a decade about ethanol saving the planet. You don't invest as much time. And he admitted, I did it in order to get elected. He yep. admitted it.
Yep.
I lied for a decade. Well, he continued the lie after it and promoted ethanol and everything else, but he used it originally when he ran, you know, in the late 90s, you know, the 99, you know, for the 2000 election.
Right.
And in 2000, that's why he said he promoted it, because he wanted to win Iowa.
Yeah.
He wanted to get the support.
I think he was saying he wanted to win his home state, which he also didn't win.
Right.
He was appealing to the farmers.
Right.
That applies to farmers anywhere.
Yeah, he wanted the support of the farmers.
Yeah.
In order to do it, but he believed that ethanol made global warming worse, and he supported it until he finally admitted he lied about it in 2010.
Yep.
And this is where we go back to, does the left actually believe in anything, even if we disagree with them? You know, when you see, for example, does Biden really believe that climate change is a problem if on the Keystone Pipeline, he does the opposite of what even his cabinet tells him to do, the
right.
climate czar,
right.
the energy czar, and the transportation czar, all tell him it'll make climate change worse. He still does it and says, I'm making climate change better. And the environmentalists don't even agree with him. And so what's the point? The point is the imagery. If we get rid of the pipeline, the imagery is that there'll be less climate change, even though by their own delusions, they believe the opposite. So I have to ask the question we've asked him many times before. Does the left actually believe in anything?
Here it is. Here's the coverage from NBC News. Now, I know they're a far-right media organization. Just bear with me. This is from November of 2010. November 22nd, 2010. Man, it's almost painful to think back that far, isn't it? And it is, here's the headline. Al Gore, votes, not science, led me back to corn ethanol. Al Gore said he made a mistake in supporting corn-based ethanol while he was in office, admitting he was more interested in farm votes for his presidential run than what was best for the environment. You and I talked about it.
Yeah, we did.
The whole farm-to-pump thing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we've talked about it, and longtime listeners may know this. It was the one time management called us about something we said on the air.
Yep. It's the only time.
The only time.
The only time.
And they were saying, what are you saying? What's the rift here? And our rift was, they're not measuring from farm to pump. When you don't measure the entire production line, you're not measuring the entire impact. Plain and simple. And it turns out that a scientist who at that time was affiliated with one of our sponsors, and we were very open about that, presented some evidence to back up what we were saying along the way. And it wasn't, it really had nothing to do with the, with their, with the production of their product at that time. It didn't promote their product or work for them or against them. It was just information that he heard. He's a conservative, and he heard us talking about it, and he offered, hey, no, this is, I've actually talked about this, and this is absolute science. And then it was 2010. Took him 10 years for Al Gore. His inconvenient non-truth.
Yeah.
This is exactly how it goes down, because they don't care. They don't care. John Kerry's not going to fly with a bunch of ketchup eaters. He's got to be on a private jet and go talk about how awesome he is for saving the planet. Grow up, people.
We have a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Starting and charging system-related issues are one of the most common causes of winter breakdowns. So when your batteries talk, it's important you listen. Knowing the warning signs that could indicate your electrical system needs attention can help you avoid getting stuck out in the cold this winter. Dim lights are an early warning sign that your alternator is degrading and near the end of its life cycle. Lights that are brighter than normal, on the other hand, can indicate your alternator is overcharging. Get a full electrical system check if you notice your headlights getting dimmer or brighter.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Listen to Red Eye Radio wherever you are with the Red Eye Radio app, available on Android and iPhone. Download it now from the App Store or by visiting.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up on the show today, Biden and the top secrets, Karine Jean-Pierre. I mean, it was just, it was beautiful yesterday. Yeah. It gets better every single day.
It does.
Especially when the one reporter asked, said, we've talked to the Justice Department. They've made it clear you can talk about the investigation.
Yep.
Oh, my.
Exactly.
It's basically saying, you've been lying this entire time.
Right.
So we will get to, I mean, just audio cuts galore around the corner. And I'm telling you, one of the things that hit social media, and you're going to see memes on it, was, again, Hunter Biden in the vet, driving the vet.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, I'm telling you. I mean, it just, it was
oh
just great.
Gosh.
How close are we to a recession? Some bad economic numbers yesterday. Interesting that you were saying just a couple of days ago, you had economists saying, well, it may be mild this year. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah. No,
the December numbers coming in.
The December numbers, which were bad, we're going to talk about those. And they were worse than the median forecast, a lot worse. And also what's going on with big tech. You know, it's like they have been, almost like they have been waiting for the first of the year to just make a bunch of cuts. Not just cutting jobs, but cutting programs. Amazon doing away with their Smile program, which is where you give, they give money to nonprofits, and you can designate your nonprofit, your favorite nonprofit, to get a percentage based on the money you spend, right? So your nonprofit that you pick benefits from that, and they're going to end that program. That's part of cutbacks, and it's a long line of big tech cutbacks that are happening right now, including tens of thousands of jobs.
We've got great audio across the board on a number of topics. Also, we'll have a Cedric update.
All right.
Anybody know Cedric? You know the reference, the Seinfeld reference.
Mm.
Who won't wear the ribbon?
You don't like the ribbon.
I'm not gonna wear the ribbon. You must wear the ribbon. He really didn't say ribbon. He said, like, Ruben.
Yeah.
Also, some interesting polling about what the public thinks, and even Democrats, about investigating Joe Biden.
Mm.
so good, you know you want to listen again with our podcast, available on our app and at redeyeradioshow.com.
He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara.
Hi.
Do you believe in miracles?
Hmm. No.
Yes. Are you ready?
Okay.
No. This isn't the Cedric hockey talk yet. Okay.
All right.
This is CNN. Yesterday.
Despite his denials, a CNN review of the laptop data as well as other public material shows that Joe Biden did interact with some of his son's associates while serving as vice president, though it's unclear exactly what was discussed. One example, the Republican cite, Miguel Alemán Magnani, a Mexican businessman and son of the former president who Hunter was trying to woo. In 2014, Alemán Magnani and his dad were photographed at the White House with then-Vice President Biden. In a later email, Hunter Biden reminds Alemán Magnani of the favors he's done for him. We have been talking about business deals and partnerships for 7 years. I have brought every single person you have ever asked me to bring to the effing White House and the Vice President's house and the inauguration. Hunter Biden bluntly acknowledged the power of the Biden name in a memoir, writing that the Ukrainian energy company Burisma, which put him on its board, considered my last name gold.
I mean, that's all stuff we were talking about.
What stuck out, out there?
2 years ago.
What stood out there is her mentioning, you know, bringing them to the White House and the Vice President's house.
Yeah.
Wait, do you mean his Wilmington, Delaware house?
Yeah. Wow.
This is, it's part of what you said yesterday or day before, where... Now the media is engaged. The liberal and mainstream media, they are very engaged in the whole thing because of the documents. And we don't know to what extent there may be any crossover there. I mean, we know with the University of Pennsylvania Biden office, we know there's crossover there and consideration because of the massive amount of donations that came in to pay for that office from China. And so when you look at that, as you pointed out, the media now is involved. They're now on this. And if they're going to cover DocumentGate, then HunterGate, whether it's related directly or not, is also going to be covered. And you're going to see that more and more. And... You know, ultimately, we said the story is too big. The Hunter Biden story has always been a monster of a story.
Yeah. Wherever it goes.
Based only on what we knew at that time.
Right.
Not even adding potentially what it could be. And we'll see where it goes down the road. But this comes down to... really the, you know, I mean, a quite possibly a massive story, especially if the two are intertwined and those documents have anything to do with the business that the family was involved in. And that's going to be a problem. And then, you know, the question of, okay, why were these documents separated? Why were the Wilmington, Delaware documents at the house, why were they separated and in different places? Who was looking at those? Because my question would be, was that person showing them to anybody else? Was that person sharing information they weren't supposed to be sharing with somebody else? I'm just asking questions, and they're very basic questions.
Let's get to some audio.
All right.
From Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday.
All right.
And she gets snippy at times. And we have a number of audio cuts here. Let's play this one here. Here we go.
But on questions that you should be able to answer here that shouldn't have to go to any other agency or entity, can you tell us if there's any sort of assessment that has been planned or launched to determine if national security has been jeopardized at all?
Again, that's for the Department of Justice.
Why is it a DOJ
question? And let's be clear, it's not your decision to make of what I can or can't answer from you.
All right.
And then, because this is when the story came out that the Department of Justice has not told them that they cannot, you know, talk about the underlying the facts of this particular case.
Right.
They haven't told them that. And,
right.
And here's when that specific question was asked. Here we go.
On that, we've all reached out to the Department of Justice. A law enforcement official tells NBC News the Justice Department has not told the White House that it cannot talk about the facts underlying the special counsel investigation into classified documents. So trusting you've received that same information, understanding the desire to be prudent, then why can't you speak about the underlying facts?
We've been very clear when it comes to even underlying facts, when it comes to specifics, when it comes to something that is under the purview, that is that the Department of Justice is looking at, especially legal matters, investigations, we do not comment from here, Peter. That has been consistent.
So
All right.
This is one of my favorites of the day. Here we go.
I want to reference an interview that President Biden did in mid-September with 60 Minutes. And in that interview, he chided former President Trump for having in his possession classified documents. He called it irresponsible. First of all, do you think it was proper for President Biden to comment on an ongoing DOJ investigation?
So I'm going to say this, and I'm going to keep it really short today, as it relates to this particular issue, as it relates to an ongoing legal matter. I'm going to refer you to Department of Justice, with that specific, as it relates to anything that you want to ask of us about this legal matter. I would refer you to the White House Counsel Office. I'm going to leave it there. Not going to go into further.
I'm simply asking you to comment
I just commented. We're moving on. Go ahead. No, go ahead. I already answered your question. Go ahead.
You really
did. Well, I did.
Remember, what was it, about 3 weeks ago? Where I said if we would be sitting there, we'd be doing exactly what... You didn't answer my question.
Right.
I said, why don't they ever say that to her? They're actually saying it to her. I answered your question. No, you didn't answer my question.
You didn't answer it. You replied.
Right. You replied, but you didn't answer my question.
You didn't answer the question.
Oh, my. This is just beautiful. And the thing is, except, you know, you can look at some of the reporters out there. You can look at Fox News. You can look at the Real Clear Politics reporter out there, probably the New York Post. But for the most part, the majority of the White House press corps has been a tool of this administration.
Yep. What did you think was going to happen? You were aware of the Hunter Biden story before the election of 2020. You knew this.
And I just...
Gary, where were they all screaming in the liberal media about the New York Post being taken off social media for the Hunter Biden story? Where were they?
Nope.
Screaming.
Nope. I just love the fact that, you know, it was brought up, you know, in there. In the actual press briefing that, well, no, law enforcement, our sources tell us, and they've been clear to us in the media, the Department of Justice is not keeping you, has not told you not to talk about all of this. And then she uses the same excuse over and over and over and over and over again, still uses the same excuse when they're saying, well, no, that's not the case. That's not the case. Well, we still don't talk about it. Why don't they? Now, see, the thing is, everybody knows what do you learn a lot out of all of this.
Yeah.
You learn a lot out of all of this.
Yeah,
this is not this. And we said this how many times? This is not to protect the integrity of an investigation, because what's the investigation about? The investigation with the special counsel in the Department of Justice is whether Biden broke the law.
Right.
So the only person he's protecting, he's not protecting. And then the media comes back and says, well, you can talk about the underlying things. You can't talk about, hey, You can't talk about the classified documents because, hey, Biden says he doesn't know what's in the classified documents. He is surprised and didn't know they were there. So why can't you talk about everything else except the top secret documents? Well, because we don't interfere in an investigation. Well, they've said we've got the information. They didn't tell you you couldn't talk about it.
Right.
Well, we're still not going to talk about it. Well, why? Why won't they talk about it? Because the only person they are protecting is not the investigation, is not the top secrets of America. It is Joe Biden.
Yep.
Not Hunter Biden they're protecting.
No.
It's Joe Biden that they're protecting. Because they know this is bad. Wherever it goes, it's bad. Even if the Department of Justice comes down, because you and I talked about this, that if you look at the Department of Justice precedent that has been set, there's a much higher bar that Hillary Clinton was involved in that you can prove. You know what the intent of Hillary Clinton was.
Right.
Hillary Clinton, not President of the United States, Secretary of State, put a server in her own home. Why? We know what the motivation was, right?
Right.
She wanted to bypass the Freedom of Information Act. That right there is against the law. You can't do it.
Right.
She put a server in her home that was not secure. Think about this, what we know about Hillary. Hillary put us, and the Democrats all backed her completely. They were like, oh, she, no big deal.
Right.
The FBI believes that foreign actors got in and hacked her computer. Comey said it.
Yep.
The FBI believes that they got in, foreign actors actually got in to the Secretary of State and looked at top secret information. That's what the FBI believes.
Right.
Because it was so accessible because it wasn't behind the whatever the B you'd call the Department of State firewall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was trying to think of a bigger word than firewall.
Well, and you know, as Secretary of State, she's fully aware and constantly being reminded of how security works, because on Mahogany Row, as they call it, you can't take your inside the State Department, you can't take a cell phone.
Yeah.
Knew that.
Yeah, there are some documents you have to go into a room. You can't,
right.
Can't even have them on your desk.
They know this.
Right. And so the fact is, and that's the bar that if you want to look at it, that's why many people believe neither Trump nor Biden will be prosecuted, mm-hmm. unless it has something to do with the influence peddling.
Right.
That's, you know, if they could make that case, you know, then and that's where they're, you know, and that's because they were so open and so divided. That's the one reason where you say, okay, what was the intent? But they knew the intent. Everybody knows Hillary Clinton broke the law.
Yep.
She broke the Freedom of Information Act. And by having the secrets there, the top secrets, she also broke the Espionage Act, mm-hmm. as we know. And, you know, you have some, did you remember just when this broke? Remember a couple of days after you had some writers saying, well, the Espionage Act is just too broad. Nobody's saying that now, are they?
No.
But nobody was even saying that with Hillary Clinton,
right.
Because everybody knew what the intent was. She wished to evade the Freedom of Information Act. She didn't want on record what she was telling people.
Right.
And so she put it in her own home. And the FBI believes foreign actors got into it. She was not prosecuted.
Nope.
So the train of thought is if she's not prosecuted, neither Trump nor... Because you can't think of a motivation for Trump, can you?
Right. What would be the motivation? I mean, I have more questions about the motivation as somebody who's going to take documents, you know, in the case of the Biden documents, and then separate them, and then separate them again.
Yep, yep.
You know, you got to know what's going. Because my question is, did that happen recently? How long have those documents been there? As we asked the question, National Archives, are they aware? And if they've been aware, when did they know?
866-90 Red Eye.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90 Red Eye on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So really, that's the thing that came out yesterday, and the media knows it, that the their sources in the Department of Justice, have told them, no, they can talk about this. You know, can't talk about, if you know what the top secret documents, of course you can't talk about that, but you can talk about, you know, how they were left there. You can answer those questions.
Right.
There's a ton of questions that you can answer that don't have to do, you know, as long as you don't bring up the top secret things. And we had said this all along, that the lawyers are telling them not to talk about it because they believe that Joe Biden could possibly be criminally liable. That's the only reason lawyers do that.
Right.
That's the only reason you do that.
Top of the Hour News is brought to you by Howes Products. Visit HowesProducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, we're Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Thank you for being here this morning. He's Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our app today and listen when and where you want.
And thank you.
All right, here we go. Nearly two-thirds of Americans, including a majority of Democrats, support a congressional investigation into President Biden's mishandling of classified documents, according to a new Yahoo News YouGov poll released Wednesday, found that 64% of adults and 52% of Democrats are in favor of lawmakers investigating the classified documents found at Biden's home and post-vice presidential office. Only 16% of Americans and 27% of Democrats oppose Congress probing the scandal. Now, this has taken probably, the 12th through the 16th. So you learned a lot from the 12th through the 16th.
Yeah.
So you're still very early on in this investigation that the public is becoming aware of it, and already you have that kind of landslide numbers. And I'm telling you, the thing that is driving the interest in the public is not that just there were top secret documents found. It's, again, it is the juicy stuff. Mm. And when I say that, I mean the things that make people react.
Yeah.
And what make people react is when you say, does this lead? I think what the public wants to know is, does this lead to the influence peddling?
Right.
You know, we played the fact that CNN is, you know, ran stories yesterday clearly saying, you know, talking about how his family was enriched by the things that he did. And then, you know, when you see the Biden Penn Center and there were, you know, the top secret documents that were there and you say why. And as we stated when this first came out, the biggest damage is not just the top secrets, but the biggest political damage, I believe, is the fact that it makes people pay attention to possible influence peddling. And, for example, this story right here from thefreebeacon.com. Since Joe Biden took office in 2021, anonymous Chinese donors have poured millions of dollars to the university that houses President Joe Biden's think tank, where at least 10 classified documents were identified.
Hmm.
Since Biden's inauguration, the University of Pennsylvania has received $51 million in foreign funding, including $14 million from unnamed contributors in China and Hong Kong, $2.4 million from unnamed contributors in Saudi Arabia, according to the Department of Education records reviewed by the Washington Free Beacon. The school also received $1 million from a source in the Cayman Islands in June to fund its Penn Wharton China program.
Hmm.
This funding is in addition to the $61 million that the University of Pennsylvania received from Chinese donors between 2017 and 2020. The names of the newer foreign donors are being kept under wrap by the Biden administration's Department of Education, a department from prior administrations that would publish this information. Is an online database. American universities that receive federal grants are required by law to disclose their overseas funders to the government. The funding details come as Biden's think tank, the Penn Biden Center at the University of Pennsylvania, has been under the media spotlight following reports that federal investigators found classified documents at the Washington, D.C. based institute and his Delaware home. You know, and I think that probably it's everything together. I think it's a combination. And we talked about this last night of the Twitter files.
Right.
Have you seen the government, you know, involved in it, the Biden administration involved in censoring the laptop that we found out that, you know, the entire Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And the media, you know, were, you know, and, you know, we found out the one intelligence official. Oh my God! Did you, his excuse? Turley wrote a great thing on this yesterday. We'll get to this in a little bit, but his excuse. Well, because so many of the things were real, you know, you had to believe it might be. Because so many of the things we believe were truthful, it had to be disinformation. That was actually his argument.
Yeah, right. Because it sounded so real.
Yeah, because
it must be wrong. It must be.
Right.
Disinformation.
Right. So now things that you believe are so incredibly real have to be disinformation. That was his defense.
Which is lame.
Pretty lame, yeah. And but you take the Hunter Biden laptop story, which again leads right to. And remember, there's never been a defense. That's the one thing that everybody recognizes. There's really never been a defense from the Biden family on it.
Yeah.
Except I knew not. The only defense was I knew nothing about my son's business ventures. And we know that's a lie based on the voicemail and the Hunter Biden emails themselves. And you have people that are willing to gone under oath saying, nope, Biden with the and this is the Chinese energy company was to receive 10% of it. And then Hunter Biden complaining about how he has to take care of the family, including Pops. Remember that one?
Yeah, right.
And those are just everything there is so damning, and it goes right to. I think what it is the public is now highly suspicious and believes that this president was involved in influence peddling.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
what else could it be? You know, people try to make the same thing. Well, the Trump family sold their name. He's a developer.
Yeah. He was selling his name long before public service.
And when you see the top secret thing, as we talked about before, remember when the initial conspiracy theories or allegations was Trump had the documents because then the LIV golf tournament was taking place at the time. And this had to do with him wanting to support, Saudi Arabia to boost his, you know, they were trying to make the case that he was trying to enrich himself.
Right.
And that's the other thing, too. After Trump's, I think there's just so many things that have come together at one point that have pounded on you where you go, huh? The entire thing of Trump's taxes. They were trying to figure, they thought they were going to get him on something. Here's a guy that is making money by being president.
Right.
And when they looked at his taxes, no, he lost hundreds of millions of dollars, possibly billions of dollars in his wealth by being president of the United States.
He said before that one of the worst days in his life is the day after he announced that he was running. Because basically everything was, you know, he realized what that was going to mean, and it didn't change his mind. He still wanted to do it.
And that's the one thing the public hates.
Right.
And so for the Democrats being so high, it's either, okay, if this will get them out of office, that's fine.
Yeah.
They may just go, well, we don't, look, he's used up. We don't need him anymore.
Right.
Yeah, investigate it. Get him out. Force him out. Do whatever you have to do.
I would say, in the comparison of enriching yourself or your family through public service, look at the net worth of Donald Trump before he became president and then after. And that would have to include the valuation of his many companies. And look at Biden's net worth before he became vice president and after.
Well, he's only been in public service.
Exactly. But that's why I said before he became vice president.
Right.
Because we'll pare it down to that service only. And so it's long been said when he was a senator, he's not one of the rich ones. He wasn't one of the wealthy ones. They didn't say that after he was vice president. Now, many of them go on and do speaking engagements, and that's fine. Some people have a problem with that. Okay. I don't really care one way or the other. But peddling influence, I do care about. If you're going to give us, if a corporation is going to hire you to be a speaker at an event, all right, okay. I understand how that works. All right, fine. Peddling influence to foreign nations is a vastly different set of circumstances. And it is not, absolutely not okay.
The poll found that Americans are not buying the spin from some Democrats and the media outlets that say Biden's classified material scandals is less serious than former President Trump's handling of presidential papers. Defenders of Biden argue that he removed far fewer documents from the White House from Trump and quickly returned them to the National Archives when they were discovered. Unlike Trump, just 31% of Americans said that Biden's case is less serious than Trump. 32% called Biden's scandal equally serious. 21% said Biden was more serious than Trump. According to the poll, a congressional investigation into Biden's storage of highly sensitive papers at the Penn Biden Center think tank and his Wilmington, Delaware home is the most popular of many probes White House Republicans have vowed to undertake. Respondents were equally favorable to an investigation into the security of the U.S. southern border, which received 64% support.
Yeah.
And this is really interesting, and less supportive into investigations of the origin of the COVID-19 pandemic, which, again, that's 59%, which is still the majority of people.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter Biden, 49%, and U.S. exit from Afghanistan, 49%. Yeah, but that's the whole point with Hunter Biden. This is all about influence peddling, which is the president. If you talk about influence peddling with the president, I bet you'd be higher because the public recognizes that.
Yeah.
I think that when you say Hunter Biden, people that don't know, well, he's not president. And that's why Democrats have always said, you're just after Hunter Biden, he's got nothing to do with it. No, he's the conduit to the president. You're going after the president for influence peddling.
Yes.
Hunter Biden is meaningless.
And that's it. Beyond the influence peddling, does it mean if the president, current president, is or was involved, is he compromised?
Yeah, exactly. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on winter weather driving. Because they are removing snow and applying sand, salt, or other road treatments, snow plows travel at a slower rate of speed than other vehicles. All drivers should maintain a safe following distance of at least 5 to 6 car lengths behind a snow plow. This will help you avoid collisions as well as potential vehicle damage from the materials being thrown on the road. Don't pass a plow unless you absolutely have to, and never drive into the snow cloud. If you do have to pass a snowplow, do it in a safe and legal passing area that is clear of snow and ice. Make sure there's enough clearance to the side, as plows are wider than most vehicles, and portions of the plow and blade may not be visible due to blowing snow. If you encounter a snowplow approaching from the opposite direction along an undivided highway, pull as far over to the right side as is safe. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by Pilot Flying J and by Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. See the story here? A ton of other stories out there.
Yeah.
There's from Reason.com, the libertarian magazine. Progressive Democrats in Congress, led by Elizabeth Warren, Representative Jamal Bowman, are urging the White House to marshal all available regulatory powers to impose rent control on the entire country. The letter, authored by the two and signed by 50 members of Congress, proposes seven actions of varying radicalism and legality that President Joe Biden could take to cap rent increases in the United States. Mm-hmm. We urge your administration to pursue all possible strategies to end corporate price gouging in the real estate sector.
That includes anything you're renting out to Hunter.
Yeah, because that was quite expensive, $49,000.
That's a bit pricey.
Yes. Simply put, the rent is too high, and millions of people across this country are struggling to stay stably housed as a result. The letter from Democrats in Congress echoes demands by left-wing housing activists to retain and expand on those emergency interventions. The post-pandemic increases in rents, they argue, represent an ongoing emergency that demands a robust federal response. Isn't it amazing the way that they create the problem? They create the problem, and then they punish individual citizens as a way of solving the problem.
Right. I mean, if they were, imagine that they were, because this is never going to happen, but imagine that they were, it looked like they were starting to get close to enough votes to make something like this happen. Well, inevitably, what would you see? Rental rates would skyrocket from both companies and individuals that rent to other individuals. They would ramp up their rates before it took effect.
The demand is that they want the Federal Housing Finance Agency, the independent regulator of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, to impose anti-price price gouging protections, rent control, and just cause eviction standards in properties with government-backed mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
Where exactly they would get the legal power to impose rent control on properties with a Freddie or Fannie-backed mortgage isn't discussed in congressional Democrats' letters.
Exactly, because you don't always have that choice. Fannie and Fannie's still buying mortgages. So if you, let's say you go out and you buy a commercial, you know, property and you finance it through whatever bank.
You and I did.
Yep.
Happened at the same time.
Yeah, it was our residential properties, but
right. It
happened at about the same time. And then all of a sudden you get a letter in a couple of months. Well, Fannie Mae is taking over the loan. They're buying the paper.
Freddie Mac got mine.
Did they?
Yeah.
Okay, Fannie Mae got mine.
Yeah.
And so it was not a choice that I made.
Right.
So if, you know, that's the question. Okay, is this going to apply to anybody who has a Fannie Mae loan? Because it's one thing if I go in and say I want to apply for any government benefit in applying for this loan, right? If I go seek that government benefit, you know, that, all right, and they're saying, well, as a condition of that, and I sign a contract with a bank, and then in turn the government sponsored entity that says, as a result of this, you're going to have to adhere to these rules, regulations, and everything that applies. But That's not the way it works with all paper that Fannie and Freddie buy. They buy it from banks without the borrower knowing anything about it.
Or after it, yeah.
Yeah, right. After that's already done.
Right.
So, you know, if you're going to, are you going to change the rules as you go?
Yeah.
Well, this is never going to happen.
No, it's you're not going to get, happen.
It's
no.
not going to, but no. It is important to point out what they would like to do if they had enough votes, if they had enough radicals on Capitol Hill, and they had the same radical in the White House.
Consider yourself canceled if you don't listen nightly. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, we just have to focus on this again because, we talked about it once, but it really, when I saw it again and again and again and again, more stories on it, and this is a story of Douglas Wise, the former Defense Intelligence Agency Deputy Director and former Senior CIA Operations Officer, who admits that they knew that most of the Hunter Biden laptop story was real.
Right.
But listen to this logic here that he's trying to sell people. He's yes, Wise still maintains that while true, he and other officials were right to call it out as likely disinformation, arguing that something is true but still constitute disinformation. Well, that sounds a lot like disinformation. He told the Australian that all of us figured a significant portion of that content had to be real to make any Russian disinformation credible. And then this is Jonathan Turley's column in Fox News. So, the emails and photos showing criminal acts with prostitutes and thousands of emails on influence peddling was likely true, but that truth only made them more dangerous forms of Russia disinformation. Yeah, that's it.
Get Martin Short on the phone right now, please.
Oh, Nathan, was it Nathan Strom?
Yeah.
Is that the lawyer?
Was it me? Of course. I mean, you know, it sounded so true.
Yeah. So
that made it more dangerous,
right? Because it was true. That made it more dangerous Russian disinformation,
yeah.
Even though it wasn't Russian disinformation.
Right. It's like if Martin Short's character, he was playing a tobacco executive, had said, well, look, we're very adamant about getting those warning labels out to as many people as possible. So it's important that we sell as many cigarettes as we can because each of those packages has that.
Warning.
Very important message on it.
Turley writes, it also means that under this dubious logic, you can spike any true story that is embarrassing to the president or the party as presumptive disinformation. Indeed, White says that it was no surprise to learn that the emails that he helped spike were actually genuine. He is not alone. Washington Post columnist Thomas Ridd wrote that we must treat the Hunter Biden leaks as if they were foreign intelligence operations, even if they probably aren't. Well, I guess if I guess if these people believe that a biological male can be a biological female because a biological male says so, and then the biological male should compete in sports with the biological male should compete with the biological female in sports, well, then you can come up with this type of insane logic. As I said before, we started this earlier with the whole climate change thing. What is it to liberal? What do they actually believe? Do they actually believe anything, or is it just whatever excuse we can come up with at the moment to push forth our narrative?
Well, you know, when the word tribalism was floating around, right? I guess it still is. There are so many considerations with that kind of mentality, and we've talked about it over the years. And we said, look, it is not this grand conspiracy necessarily. It is the same mindset. It is a culture.
Culture.
It is a, and so if you want to say, well, it's a tribalism, it really is that mindset, right? And so when all of this was happening, where you had the former members of intelligence that were all signing on board saying, this sounds like Russian disinformation, the whole Hunter laptop thing, it was in the flow of the New York Post being shut out of social media and this being shoved into a corner as a conspiracy theory from the right. And everybody was in a part of that flow. So when they come back now and go, well, but it sounded, I don't buy that for a second. I didn't buy it, what they were saying about it at the beginning, because they weren't treating it as you would treat any piece of information or evidence. And it goes back to the kind of mentality and culture that was at the FBI under the leadership of a James Comey. And maybe, who knows, probably Mueller and a number of them, where they don't talk like investigators. In this case, when they all signed on board and said, well, this sounds like Russian disinformation, you sound like you're a bunch of guys sitting around at a bar. You've lost all credibility. I don't care who you are when you say, well, it sounds like. Your only response if anybody asks you if you're going to be true to what you used to do would be, I'd have to take a look at it. I don't have the evidence in front of me. I don't know what I'm looking at. Is it possible? Yeah, it's possible, but it's also possible that it's genuine. So I don't know, because I can't judge it from here. It's like, people who want to be doctors, armchair doctors. And, well, that person looks, there are a number of things and considerations that we have for the current president. And it is very clear that his mind is not all there. We can't tell you, though, what's going on with him. A lot of people did this with Trump when he was in office. There's something very wrong with the guy. You don't like the guy. You know, all of this, it's the same kind of mindset. It's this, well, we're just going to jump on board because it looks like the winds are going against the New York Post or anybody at that time claiming that this Hunter laptop thing was real. We're going to help squash this and be a part of it. We're going to be part of that flow. And call it tribalism, call it whatever. I don't know why people do that, but they absolutely do it these days. And it's dangerous, because then if you apply it to people who are at the FBI, we'll just, you know, this is, I'm just taking this out of, it's a, it, this is not ever going to happen. But imagine that you had people at the FBI that went to work for Twitter and decided that they're going to bring that culture over to Twitter and kind of, sit next to a bunch of liberal tech people and shut down conservatives or anything they don't like. I mean, this is where it becomes especially dangerous, because then at that point, if there is the mindset ultimately inside a society where there is great acceptance of that kind of behavior, how long before it's a matter of policy? And I mean outright policy, not the fact that they're doing it and people don't know they're doing it, but I mean it's actual policy that is put in place either on a state or federal level. That's what gets scary very quickly.
And when you talk about, when we talk about tribalism, and I mean as a society, the word itself is viewed as being bad.
You know,
tribalism is bad. Well, not really.
Right.
It depends on what you talk about with tribalism. If, for example, we all believe in the United States Constitution and we are part of that tribe that believes in the United States Constitution, to me that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing.
Yep.
If you sit there and say, I belong to this tribe and I belong to a label, and the label is whatever the narrative is, truthful or not, to me that is a bad tribe. You know, and so you look at it and you see the tribalism that they talk about, for example, on the right. Well, they deny elections. Well, so does the left. You know, I think it was Michael Barone wrote a column talking about all these Republicans that are out there, like David Brooks and, he calls himself a conservative, talking about how horrible it is of the election denying on the right. It says, but they completely forget about the what happened, not only election denying, but the fact that the election denying from the Democrats came from from the Hillary Clinton campaign. They created and financed a lie and set the Trump campaign up. And
right.
said, unless you're willing to talk about that, which is, you may sit there and you may want to accuse somebody, well, you can't prove that, and that's tribalism because of election denying there. With the Democrats, you have election denying, and on top of that, they created the complete conspiracy. They created it. The
right.
Hillary campaign, he goes, and there seems to be no acknowledgement of that
right.
from even people that call themselves Republicans or never Trumpers. It's only all about Trump's election denying. It's like, if you're going to do that, to be intellectually honest, you've got to hit both sides. And that in itself is a kind of tribalism. I'm only going to stick to this one thing.
Right.
I'm not going to go across the board. But tribalism is not, to me, a good form of tribalism. Is the effort from a ton of people out there to ensure that elections have integrity and that they are transparent and that the chain of custody is limited with a ballot. In fact, I like the chain of custody limited to voter machine.
Right.
That's it. Because that, to me, is the best way, the best way to go. Somebody on MSNBC was it saying that, white people would rather inconvenience themselves basically by going to a booth and voting in order to deny blacks their right to vote. That
you're just making if you believe that, you're making that up.
You're making stuff up as you go along, but I like that one. Well, that, again, that's a form of tribalism because that's an absolute lie. You
right.
go to the polls and you go and do that because you say, I'm more confident that my vote will count.
Right.
Got nothing to do with anybody else. You can do what you want.
That's actually what drives me.
That's what drives me.
I want to be a part of the process, but I also want to, and call it micromanagement, but I think it's actually a good form of micromanagement.
Right.
I want to make sure that effort is going to mean something.
And so if this has led us, the situation over the last couple of years across the board in our state and other states, and it hasn't in many liberal states, but if it leads to a Georgia election law, if it leads to Texas election law to ensure, well, then that's a good thing.
Yeah.
There are things that can happen that you go, I think they're going too far there. Okay, well, that isn't true there and everything else. But what does it lead to? Okay, it leads to legislators saying, yeah, but we do have problems here, and we do have problems here, and we do have problems here. And because we don't have transparency here, or because it goes this way, there is no confidence. For example, look at Maricopa County. There's no confidence from probably half or more of the voters there that things are being run the right way. You can't have that in an election. So that's a good thing that comes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And say, well, the tribalism to change election laws. Yeah, to have more integrity and more transparency, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the tribalism is bad when it's all based on lies or just based on the fact that I belong to this label. And so whatever this label says is what I agree with.
Right.
To me, that's bad tribalism.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, and there was that going on. And clearly, I don't know why you would, if you were, you know, a former intelligence official, why you would jump on board something like that when you know in your heart of hearts, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I have no idea what's on that laptop. I can throw out possibilities, but those possibilities, in my opinion here, mean nothing.
If you're a true intelligence agent of the United States who looks for facts, that's what you say.
And I don't have anything in front of me, so what I think means nothing at this point.
What Y showed is he's a political hack.
Exactly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Join the conversation using the Shell Rotella hotline.
866-907-3339. It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the top of the hour, a Cedric update.
All right.
Going back to the old Seinfeld episode.
Mm.
Who don't wear the ribbon? We'll get to that coming up. Also, what else do I have here? Oh, yeah, the Facebook story. Facebook to allow pictures of naked breasts for trans and non-binary people, but not for cisgender women.
Huh.
Yes.
Okay.
Discrimination of breasts.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here. Download our Red Eye Radio app today, and you can listen when and where you want. Time for our Cedric update.
All right.
The story, another story of the National Hockey League again, where the hockey player Ivan Provorov, I think I'm saying his name correctly, said he would not wear the gay pride jersey for warm-ups for the Flyers the other night during Pride Night.
Yeah.
And the left, it's really interesting because I think with everything going on, the left is looking for anything that they can just hype.
Yeah.
I've noticed that the last week or so. What was the other topic that I'm like, oh, that's getting a lot more publicity than I thought it would get. And one of the things I saw on social media, it's like, wow, Seinfeld called it. And it's like, oh, okay, it's the AIDS walk. Mm. Where Kramer refused to wear the ribbon.
Right, right.
And the classic line, hey, Cedric, this guy won't wear the ribbon. He turns around. Who won't wear the ribbon? One of my favorite Seinfelds of all time. And then they attack and basically beat up Kramer.
Right.
For not wearing the ribbon, even though he is participating in the AIDS walk. He said, you know, don't you believe in, you know, don't you believe at that point in curing AIDS? Yeah, I'm walking, but you're not wearing the ribbon.
Right.
And so, you know, you get to this point now. And I have always, I mean, since the Pride movement started, I've always thought it's a little bit ridiculous. Gay pride, black pride, white pride, whatever the whole concept that of pride. And if you look it up in the Oxford Dictionary, pride is about being, you know, feeling good about what you've accomplished in life.
Yeah. And, you know, and, you know, I guess how you behave.
Right. And that's an accomplishment, how you behave. I mean, those are all things. How you behave is the judgment that people have towards you. We know the radical LGBTQ, the radical left LGBTQ. We know that and they will tell you, they said, well, pride is about our dignity.
Hmm.
Well, that's something you get from yourself.
Right.
We've often said many times, because it's obvious, that there is this push on the left to force you not just to participate. It wasn't about tolerance. It was even more than acceptance. It was, you must celebrate with us or you're something phobic.
Right.
Well, what are you celebrating? Are you celebrating who somebody is sleeping with? Is that it? Are you celebrating the fact that you view yourself as a marginalized community that still a majority of people may not agree with your sexuality, and therefore they must be forced to celebrate with you? You know, they talk about, you know, he said he's a Russian Orthodox, and so it's against his religion.
Hmm.
Well, you know what's against, you know what's against Catholicism? Premarital sex. Men and women living together.
Mm-hmm.
You hear this quite often from the liberal gay activists out there, that the fact that you think I'm going to hell makes you a bigot. Well, you're Catholic, and you sleep with somebody outside of marriage, you're going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Should there be live-together pride because you're discriminated against from many major religions? What's the point? Well, it's about the fact that these people have lived in shame and now they need to have dignity. That's up to you. You decide that.
Yeah.
You decide whether you have dignity.
Right.
Not whether somebody else agree. You make that judgment.
Nobody can take that from you.
Right.
You control your behavior. And you can choose to act in a dignified manner or not.
And I've always thought, you know, people ask, well, aren't you proud to be Irish? No, I don't. It's what I am.
You didn't make that happen.
Yeah, I didn't make that happen. I'm just, so whatever argument you have, whether it's not a choice, it is a choice, it still, it doesn't hold any water. You are right. What you are.
Yeah.
You are what you are, or you are what you choose. Whatever argument that you want to put in there. But this is just the left demanding that you celebrate with them. I don't have to celebrate. I don't have to care. Well, you're this aphobic. No, can you have something that says I just don't care at the end of it? I don't care. You go do what you do. You know, I'll care if somebody, I will care if somebody denies you your right to vote. I'll care then if somebody tries to take away your freedom of speech. I'll care then.
Yeah, I care about anybody's rights being violated.
But to ask me to care about your sexuality is bizarre. Or your transgender behavior.
Hmm.
Or your transgender mindset. There are things that I am concerned with. I am concerned with any human being where the suicide rate is a lot higher. And we see that with transgenders that are part of the LGBTQ movement. Yeah, I'm concerned about that. Why? Because I'm concerned with human life.
Mm-hmm.
But you see the blowback here from the left, and I'm like, this really is really getting to be interesting here. And, you know, for sports leagues getting involved in the whole, you know, because now, you know, the NHL, I mean, they have they have transgender night.
Mm-hmm.
About what? What does that mean? Do you support men playing in women's leagues? What is it that you support? And it's almost as if they'll never tell you what they actually support. They just say, we support it. They'll never get into you notice the leagues never get into the details of it. Well, we support the dignity. Well, I support the dignity of all individuals, but the dignity of all individuals comes from within you. If you allow it to take somebody to take it away, that's on you. You don't force somebody to say, I want you to celebrate my pride. What are you, nuts? That's up to you.
And I don't know why you would want to force anybody to do that.
Andrew Sullivan, who is gay, said that, you know, the well-known columnist, he said that. He said,
Because who's doing this? Would you rather show a group of people who are there voluntarily or take a picture, which is really just a photo op, of individuals who are forced to do that through the rules of whatever organization? Are they actually celebrating? Because it started with celebrating pride. Well, show me who's actually celebrating. Because when an entire organization comes in and says, nope, we're doing this, all the individuals in the organization then just become numbers. And it doesn't mean anything because you don't know that they actually celebrate it or not.
Well, we see with the liberal transgender activist movement, part of the liberal gay movement today, where they've been clear. You need to celebrate with us and support us and use our language or we wish to destroy you. We've seen where it goes.
Right. Yep.
It's obvious where it goes. You agree with me. You celebrate with me. You give up your opportunity.
Yes.
In your life, if you're a woman. And if you don't, we'll destroy your life. Hey, that's something to be proud of, isn't it? I've got pride in that, right? Let's destroy women's opportunity and women's lives. Yeah, we feel pride about that.
Well, it's as if they're saying as a group, well, women, you had your moment.
Yeah.
Your moment is over now.
Right, exactly.
Everything that applies to you now or did apply up until now is over. Go sit down, because now you're going to have to take a back seat to those who want a place on the team.
And the liberal transgender activist movement that is a part of the liberal LGBTQ movement now, they accept that type of behavior. They accept the misogyny, the liberal gay left that includes transgenders. They accept the misogyny that exists today. They promote the misogyny.
Yep.
That exists today. So, yeah, but as to this whole thing, it gets to the point of being, you know, being ridiculous.
Well, and again, I don't know why you would want to force people into your celebration.
Yep. And that's why we said, you know, it's like, throw out the phobics and we'll throw out the, you know, we'll throw out the misogyny.
Right.
We'll throw out the women hating. Go ahead. We'll do it.
Right.
You have to throw a label out. We'll throw labels back. Now let's actually talk about the substance of the argument, and you won't do that. But we see where it's gone in the liberal transgender activist movement, again, part of the liberal LGBTQ movement in this country.
Yeah.
And again, what it is, you must be forced or go to jail. That's where it's going in this in the world now. You must say these words.
Yep.
Because you will hurt my feelings and I might commit suicide if you don't. So therefore, you must use these particular words or you might go to jail.
That's
you've seen that
where,
in Canada.
That's where they build up what they believe, what you to believe is the consensus. What the question I was asking earlier of why would you want people in a group that aren't actually celebrating? They're forced to be there through rules. Well, because it starts creating a mindset where you know you are powerless to speak out against it. And so you go along to get along. And once that is the case, it starts shaping policy. Policy to the point of, in California, even though it was struck down, they had a law against using improper pronouns that came with a jail sentence. It was actually part of California law for a short time. It got to that point.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that without building what is really a false consensus. We're going to go along to get along. I'm going to be a part of it because if I speak out, if there is any dissent, I know what's coming my way.
By the way, that's not a good strategy to build tolerance and hopefully acceptance if that's what you want.
Right.
That's not a
true
way to get there.
Right.
True acceptance. That's not a way to get there.
No, it isn't. Because people it will become more defiant because they're forced to be there. They're forced to think that way. They're forced to act or even speak a certain way. Why would you want that? If there is going to be a conversation about acceptance and educating the public about whatever your choices are in your life, whatever your situation is, okay. People can choose to be a part of that conversation. People can choose to listen. Many people can choose to listen quietly. And I support anyone doing and living the life that they want to live without their rights being violated. I don't support shaping policy to the effect that it controls language and behavior. No.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Listen to Red Eye Radio wherever you are with the Red Eye Radio app, available on Android.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, one of the stories out yesterday was that Trump's coming back, planning to come back to Twitter and Facebook, asking Facebook to remove his suspension.
Hmm.
And so some of the questions have come up. If he does it, isn't that an acknowledgement that True Social has failed? You were looking at the unique visitors in September, 1.7 million. That's nothing.
Yeah. No.
That's nothing. Or is it the realization? Because he has, just in case people don't know, part of the contract with True Social is the fact that he has to put out anything. He can be on Twitter and Facebook contractually, but only 8 hours after he puts out the message on True Social.
Yeah.
So the fact is that if he's, you know, he's, well, he is running again, not if he's running.
Right.
He is running again.
Yeah.
If he's going to, let me put it this way, if he's going to actively campaign, then he understands that True Social is not going to get it done if he wants
right,
to get
right.
his message out.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to be on social media across the board. And according to also one source, there were in December, Truth Social, the app had about roughly 2 million active users. Active is not necessarily daily. And so the question would be, all right, is there potential for growth there? I think there's a lot of, you know, it's a ever fluid situation in social media to begin with. But I think with Elon Musk taking over Twitter and conservatives feeling like they can actually post something without being punished on Twitter, that's going to be a driver, at least in the short term, for Twitter. But if you're going to run, you know, if you're running for office, you're going to have that social media presence. You're going to have to get the word out, and that's how you do it. And you're going to have to be on every social media platform. You're going to have to be active. You're going to have to go to where the people are. And in today's world, that's at least virtually where they are. They're on social media.
We're coming up on the one-year launch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's not even a year old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But does it take next month?
Yeah.
But does it take any of the slow growth? Because it's been so slow growth.
Yeah.
You don't have 50 million active users.
Right.
You've got, you know, roughly, you know, 2 million now, which means what kind of growth, you know, what kind of growth do you need? What are your, I'd like to see the business model right now. Mm-hmm. What's coming in, what's going out?
Yeah, the churn rate.
No, I mean advertising rate.
Oh, okay.
I mean the income versus outgo.
Okay.
What is the cost to keep through social going? Mm-hmm. How much are they getting in advertising?
Right. Yeah,
the business model.
You know, and it's not gonna be much, because then when you look at 2 million active users, well, it's like with any social media platform, those users, how many of those users follow the same handful of individuals at the top, right? So that's how you monetize, is where the people are going within that app. And that's a good question.
On your smart speaker, say, "Play Red Eye Radio," and if you're really nice, she might. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you want to get in. Speaking about social media. Meta's Oversight Board announced a new policy Wednesday that will allow transgender and non-binary people to display their naked breasts on Facebook and Instagram, but will continue to forbid posts by cisgender women, which are biological women that believe they're women. So they're discriminating on breasts.
Well, okay. Is the policy for those who claim to be non-binary?
I guess so, yes. What's the evidence?
Exactly. What's the standard that has to be met for this policy? Because any person could say, this is how I identify, and put that in the description in their bio.
But if you don't, if you have pride in being a cisgender woman, I had to. Then you will put that you are a biological woman who believes you're a biological woman.
Yeah.
The Oversight Board, fine. We are against breast discrimination here on Red Eye.
Well, okay. So
the Oversight Board finds that removing these posts is not in line with Meta's community standards, values, or human rights responsibility.
Human rights responsibility?
Yes.
Show your boobs?
These
Did I miss one of the marches?
Apparently so, yes. These cases also highlight fundamental issues with Meta's policies. Look, I want to make this clear before we go any further that my real policy on any type of nakedness. I lived on the beaches of Fort Walton Beach, Destin, and Navarre, Florida for almost 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Even back then in the 80s, people would talk about the fact that, you know, women should be able to go topless. Mm-hmm. I disagree. Men should put their tops back on.
Right, okay.
Unless you're in the water.
Yeah.
The human body, for the most part,
mm-hmm.
99.9%. I know Seinfeld said it's less than 5% of people that are actually good looking.
Oh, it's not that many.
No, I believe it's less. And I'm including myself in that, by the way.
I don't take my shirt off when I get in the shower.
Yes.
I have mirrors, and I don't need to see that. I mean, mirrors that when I get out of the shower, I don't want to be. That's like, ew.
We aren't beautiful. We are an extremely ugly species. Myself included.
Yeah.
And so just so you understand what our red eye policy is, everybody put on clothes and lots of them.
We're into everybody shaming.
Yeah.
We're into people shaming, which is equal.
Oh, we'll get to this back to this in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw a commercial for, I think it was Hill's pet food, cat and dog food yesterday.
Okay. All right.
That we need to get rid of pet obesity. Isn't that pet obesity shaming?
It is.
I saw that. I'm like, wait a minute. That's pet. God, I'm telling you, that's how I think. I see this commercial. And the thing is, I'm only with my cat. It's always, you know, since I had a couple of fat cats, you're always worried because you know about their health. And so that's, but the stories over the last couple of weeks just on fat shaming and everything else, which just is getting to the point of absurdity because it is a health issue.
Yeah.
When I saw the commercial, the first thing I thought of was, that's pet shaming.
Why are you pet fat shaming? What is this?
Exactly.
If my schnauzer doodle feels beautiful, then my schnauzer doodle is beautiful. And you can quote me on that. Just don't ask me how to spell it.
So there you go. So they're going to allow pictures of naked breasts for trans and non-binary people, but not for biological women who believe they're biological women.
Yeah, well, but you can't set a standard as to who is who.
It's true.
How dare you? And why do I need to meet that standard in any way in terms of a description in a bio or something like
that's
that?
That's a great point.
Because what if I just put the word, what if my bio only read, I'm not on Instagram, and I have an account somewhere on Facebook. I haven't been on. I went on the other day. A friend of mine is not doing well, and I sent him a message. What if I just put in the descriptive in my bio, just the word pride, just that word, pride. No emoji, nothing.
No colors.
Just nothing. Just the word pride. And then, because now Facebook and Instagram has entered the judgment category, they're going to be judging. Because they're setting the standard. Because it's easy enough to say, hey, no topless photos, and if it were me, I would adopt the Eric and Gary policy that includes men. Put
yes.
your shirt on.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, which means you can't put any clips from the TV show Cops on ever. You would never be able to. That wouldn't even couldn't air that ever. But the now that they've changed the rule, they're saying, wait a minute. This goes beyond, it's not about topless or not topless or whatever. This is about you deciding who's who and saying, well, we don't believe that person is this. How dare you?
Yeah, because if you put pride on, you're just putting the word in that has numerous meanings. You're assuming that's sexual.
Right.
I like that.
And so there is the conundrum. And it is inevitably going to backfire, because how is it that you get to judge a person and say, well, we don't believe that person is this? Oh, you don't get to say that. Sorry, Mr. Zuckerberg, you're getting old. This is 2023. We're sorry that Meta failed. Actually, I'm not sorry, because it was crap to begin with. And we told you that. Eric and Gary knew. Sorry, you can't sell a cartoon world.
Not when the real world is a cartoon.
Not
world.
Even Dora the Explorer is trying to do that anymore. That's over. So now they want to, I don't know. They thought they were going to, I don't know, gain some points. You don't get to decide, because at some point it will require that the enforcers, the Facebook enforcers, have to look at that and say, we allow it for some, but not all. Well, that person doesn't fit that category. You don't get to put them in the category. In fact, it was Facebook that said there were, 58 at one point, 58 different categories you could fall into.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't have to claim which category I fall into with Facebook or Instagram. You shouldn't require that. That is wrong. And if you truly believe in my rights, this isn't about rights, by the way. If you truly believe in my rights, you have to recognize that what you're doing is wrong, and that your new policy violates your actual policy.
Let me ask you this, because I think we had talked about this earlier, probably sometime last year, and we saw it on LinkedIn, and sometimes occasionally you'd see it on Facebook and Twitter, people putting their pronouns on.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. It seemed to spike, though. I really haven't noticed many more doing that.
Right, right.
To me, it's dumb. And I've always thought, especially on LinkedIn, but I went, nah, I need, LinkedIn is sort of a business networking thing. I don't want to. I was like, I wonder if I'll get banned, because I always want to put on, Gary McNamara and then hee haw.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, would that be enough to get me kicked off of LinkedIn?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe.
Are you not allowed to make fun of the pronouns?
Oh, no. You're not. I don't know to what extent LinkedIn enforces that. But generally speaking, no, you're not allowed to make fun.
Because you saw, it was probably the middle of last year.
You don't like the pronouns? You don't want to wear the pronouns in your bio?
I'm not going to wear the pronouns. I did like the one with Michael Jackson, though, where it was he. That was
yeah,
the best.
That
last
actually
year.
Is very funny.
But here's the interesting thing. The vast majority of people that use that I've seen on LinkedIn that use their pronouns are biological males stating they're biological males, and biological females saying they're biological females.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
That's been the majority.
Right.
It's hard not to miss it, because you go, what's that at the end of the name? Oh, okay. They're putting their pronouns, and it's all, not all, but the vast majority are basically, he, him, what is it? Him, he, him, don't know. And then her. Is it her? I don't even know what it is.
I think it's A-E-I-O-U and sometimes Y.
But it's almost as if that reached a peak where it's like, okay, the people that were going to do it are going to do it.
Right, yeah.
But
right.
Like I said, the majority of it, again, is that virtue signaling? I mean, is that the ultimate in virtue signaling?
In putting that in your bio,
when you're not
yeah, yeah,
when you're not non-binary or not or not transgender.
Right. You're going to be a hero for the cause
right.
that actually isn't your cause, but you're going to be a hero for the cause. Yeah.
Yeah. I just wondered. I just don't know.
You're going to change the world.
Save the world. I'm at the World Economic Forum. I'm going to save the world.
You and your fat schnauzer doodle are going to save the world. And these are the things that, you know, I mean, corporations, but really when you talk about social media, it's beyond a corporation. It's a society, you know, because it is that virtual presence. It is that we have. All have our pages and we go there and it's kind of our, you know, a daily thing. It's a part of our life. Not everybody is on social media every day, but many people are. And so they really do believe at Facebook, at Instagram, and used to believe it at Twitter, the old guard at Twitter, used to believe that this is the power that they have, that they're going to change the conversation. Well, controlling the conversation isn't changing the conversation.
I have seen articles on LinkedIn suggesting that you do use your pronouns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm like, excuse me, this is for networking for a job.
You know what they're saying? Yeah. You know why they're saying that? Because you need to put on display. What they're talking to people who are actively looking for a job, campaigning for a job, because LinkedIn is really about B2B, or people who run a small business that interact with others. You need to demonstrate that you're in line with what we're doing, because if you don't, then a prospective HR department or a prospective business partner is not going to look at you with the same eyes. You're going to have a problem getting in the door if you don't fully cooperate. That's what they're saying. You better play the game.
So don't put your college on there. Remember, that was from yesterday.
Yeah, I don't do. I don't put my college on it. I don't put my college anywhere. Anywhere. I'm not going to brag.
He didn't go to college.
Don't say that.
See, it's the elitist here. I'm the privileged talking down to you.
Right. You and your University of Buffalo.
Yeah, it went from...
It's a university.
Well, the University of Buffalo is different than Buffalo State University.
I went to
Buffalo State College, which just last week or the week before became Buffalo State University.
Well, Pluto was a planet at one time, too.
866-90 Red Eye.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Personalized savings on commercial truck insurance with Smart Haul from Progressive. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Not available in all states or situations.
At Progressive Commercial, we want
trans, non-binary, yes. Mm. Biological women that are biological women, no.
Mm. Hmm.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Hey, that's part one of our show. Don't miss the rest. Click part two on our website, redeyeradioshow.com, or Red Eye Radio phone app to hear the rest of the show. And thanks for listening to Red Eye Radio.